This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Making sure the cash is there.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The fund that guarantees most of our money in a bank may need a good bit of bolstering itself. Some analysts warn the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has been so depleted by bank failures that it could sink into the red by the end of this year. Today, the FDIC will disclose how much is left in its insurance fund, and Chair Sheila Bair may talk about how it plans to boost its bottom line. That includes the possibility of borrowing from the Treasury and/or raising fees it charges to banks. When we talk about failing banks, typically they're smaller ones, small by Bank of America or Citibank standards. And while we've been hearing better news coming from the big financials lately, does that really mean they're doing that much better? Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us this morning to talk about the banks and where they are now. So, Chris, let's start the conversation with Citigroup. We keep hearing about profits and stock prices going up. What does that say about the company and more importantly, the banking sector?
You know, I think Citi is really a metaphor for the whole economy and the whole bailout. If you go back a year ago, we were staring at the abyss, and the government came in and it bought a 34% stake in Citi. It helped restore that company's fortunes. Now, just like the economy is turning around, so is Citigroup. But we're not going to be reaping any gains anytime soon. There's still a lot of problems at Citi. There's still a lot of toxic assets. Take a look at our economy. Yes, we're doing better. But the housing market, you know, it's stumbling along. A lot of workers are unemployed.
So broadening this a little bit to the other big banks, I mean, these are the very people that caused the problem in the first place. What kind of lesson do they learn if the government, i.e. you and I and everyone else here, come to their rescue every time?
Okay, there's several lessons. First lesson is eventually the banks in Wall Street learned the government will bail us out. Therefore, second lesson is regulators, Obama administration, Congress, you have to change the rules of the game. Otherwise, we're going to be back in the same situation we were before. Maybe it might take 5 years, might take 10 years, but that's the risk.
Change the rules how?
Change the rules that banks cannot take the kinds of risks that they did. You can't have short-term profit motivation with the banking system, and you don't want a situation where a Goldman Sachs can convert itself into a commercial bank for a bailout and then unconvert itself fairly quickly afterwards because the markets are better. That's not good for the taxpayer. It's not good for the economy.
And all that notwithstanding, Chris, do we have a way to see this coming next time, sort of a reliable gauge?
Bubbles are embedded in the optimism of capitalism. If you look back to our history since 1825, that's really when the industrial economy, the sort of business cycle that we now are familiar with, took off. Since that period of time, bubbles have happened. Bubbles are going to happen in the future. That's the warning sign.
Bottom line, were the bailouts a good idea?
Yes, the bailouts were a good idea. The economy is recovering. And frankly, the taxpayer has a profit, or at least looks like the taxpayer has a profit on their investment in the bank bailout.
All right. Economics correspondent Chris Farrell joining us. Chris, thanks.
Thanks.
Over in Britain, the top financial regulator is calling for a new global tax on the finance industry. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The head of the Financial Services Authority seems to take a dim view of the businesses he regulates. Adair Turner describes the financial sector as swollen, making excess profits and paying extravagant bonuses. He says much of what goes on in London's financial centre is socially useless. In a magazine interview out today, Turner makes the case for a global tax on financial transactions to rein in the industry. Forget it, says Stuart Fraser, an ambassador for London's financial district.
The chances of a global tax, I think, are pretty remote. I mean, we live in a very competitive world, and taxation is an important factor as to where businesses reside.
Fraser says other financial centres like Dubai, Singapore and Hong Kong would never adopt the tax. He says they're too keen to make themselves more competitive than London and New York. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Numbers right now, European shares are flat. The German DAX is down by 0.5%. Asian shares closed mostly lower today. Not much oomph on Wall Street yesterday, but it did stay in the green. The S&P and NASDAQ tacked on a small fraction of a percent, while the Dow added 4 points to close at 95.43. The world's number three PC brand, Acer, barely matched market expectations for its second quarter results. The company's been hit by thinning profit margins in the low-cost netbook PC stronghold.
American Public Media presents the Marketplace Whiteboard, videos unwrapping the basics of the financial crisis. You can watch them anytime at marketplace.org.
Temperature has climbed above 100 degrees in San Antonio, Texas, 57 times this year. That record-breaking heat wave is cooking up some high energy bills. From Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies reports.
In Texas, the summer of 2009 will be remembered for high temperatures and high power bills.
We're seeing record prices largely because of high consumption, with people having to run air conditioners just to keep cool, sometimes 24 hours a day.
Randy Chapman of the Texas Legal Services Center says many of the state's power plants burn natural gas, and now natural gas is cheap. So then why are Texas energy bills so expensive?
It's a little like the weather. The climate is not exactly the same all over Texas, and neither are electric prices.
That's Terry Hadley of the Texas Public Utility Commission. He says the power grid in cities like Houston and Dallas are unregulated, and competition drives down prices. But Austin and San Antonio are still regulated. Regulation was a good thing last year when natural gas prices were high. But during this hot summer, customers are stuck with soaring bills. In San Antonio, I'm David Martin Davies for Marketplace.
Finally, this is one town in the red. Thousands in one Spanish city pelted each other with squishy tomatoes. It's a good-natured battle that filled the streets of Bunol. The town hall there says more than 40,000 people took part in Tomatina, some from Japan and Australia, with hundreds of tons of tomatoes. The event has its roots between a food fight between childhood friends. It's become a tradition. No word on how much it'll cost, but the town is ripe for a big cleanup. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, it's Amy. I'm here with a special thanks to the businesses and organizations that sponsor Marketplace. This support is what fuels our reporting and allows our independent journalism to thrive. If you think that your business would benefit from sponsoring Marketplace, check out marketplace.org/corporate, fill out the short form, and someone from Marketplace will follow up. Again, that's marketplace.org/corporate.